Hey there, welcome back to the Men, Sex and Pleasure podcast. I'm your host, Cam Fraser. This is episode number 213, talking all things masculinity, sexuality, male bodies, and men's experiences of pleasure. And on today's episode, I have the pleasure of chatting with Sean Pickering. Sean is an archetypal guide to couples, a sovereign birth guide for men, and also a mentor slash coach. He helps men understand where they're at in terms of being a pillar in the birth space, as well as helping men build a plan to empower them in that birth space. He's also the host of the Birth Space Brotherhood podcast. And you can find Sean on Instagram at im.seanpickering, and that's S-H-A-U-N-P-I-C-K-E-R-I-N-G. And you can find him at his website, which is a Stan store website. So it's stan.store/Sean Pickering. And on this particular episode, we talk about the lover archetype, what it is, the nuances with regards to the immature and mature versions of that archetype, then the shadow and the overexpressed, so like the addicted versus the impotent parts of the lover archetype. And then we turn that around and talk about the importance of self-love, loving yourself and embodying the lover archetype with some practicalities there. So lots of really interesting information from Sean with regards to this particular archetype for men. I share some of my thoughts as well. It's very, you know, king, warrior, magician, lover, Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette. So if that is something that interests you, then this is what we go into. If archetypes are something you're not familiar with, then this might be an interesting conversation, a little introduction to exploring that. Either way, there's some really interesting practices towards the end of the episode. Full disclosure, this is also a Instagram live from a couple of years ago, so the audio quality is not as great as I would like it to be. However, I think this is an important conversation to get out there, so I hope you enjoy listening to it. Well, I said just before you jumped on, I'll let you introduce yourself, so
okay.
You just pause for a couple of minutes and just let you share a little bit about who you are and what this is doing and why you and I are having this particular conversation.
Yeah, cool, man. Thank you. So my name's Sean. Grew up in Sydney my whole life. I'm a men's empowerment coach. I've done quite a few things if I talk about career-wise. So I started as a high school teacher, owned a gym, an F45 studio, personal trainer, pilot as well, and really diving now back into men's empowerment work. So for all the viewers, the reason I wanted to do this call with you, Cam, is, you know, we had a good chat about this sort of stuff, and we just connected online and we started talking about the lover archetype, and I started talking with you about my, I guess, sexual experiences growing up, how I definitely lived a lot in the shadow of the lover archetype and never really understood why, how that all linked to my inner childhood traumas and that sort of stuff, and how that came up and getting stuck in the, sorry, my son's just walking over, sure I'd run over, so you might bump the camera, sorry. So I lost my train of thought now. So yeah, so I came from growing up, ideas of what sex was, how we actually view sex as men, was actually quite toxic, quite negative, quite shadow-based, quite addictive-based. Yeah, my first experience in terms of sex, like most people it gets in our generation, was through pornography. And, you know, like viewing pornography, particularly growing up in your formative years as a teenager, is like getting education from a fire hose, and you have no idea how to deal with it. You don't understand the emotions. You don't understand the emotional regularity involved. You don't understand all the chemicals that are involved physically in your body, let alone the psychological stuff going on. So that one led me to start doing a lot of work on myself. I now have two little boys, and they've taught me how to actually look at myself. And then I really started to dig into the Jungian archetypes, and it just really landed with me when I was reading that sort of stuff about what's my childhood was like, what my upbringing was like, why I would get triggered the way I did with certain things, why I'd feel shame. So even around self-pleasure or, you know, pornography or even sex with my wife, there'd be shame after for some reason, like just an emptiness feeling, not understanding intimacy on a deeper level, and just get really sucked into that idea of the quick fix. And then, you know, as we'll talk about later in the call, going through the archetypes of being sucked into the addict and then to the depressed. I used to be very apathetic as well. So early in my 20s and that sort of stuff as well, I didn't really understand why I had that apathy, why I had those blockages. But then obviously now understanding the lover archetype and the other three archetypes being the king, the warrior and the magician, understanding how they all intertwined and affected by relationships is now I look at myself differently, and it allows me with my clients to actually look at themselves and look at their relationships differently, and allows them to open up to intimacy and vulnerability in a way that allows us to actually experience true masculinity. And it's not what we've been programmed to, I guess, be like, because we've been programmed completely differently. And it's a shame that society's gone that way, but you know, that's what we're here to do, is to do that work and to improve ourselves and better ourselves in relationships.
Beautiful, man. Thank you so much for sharing, dude. And you know, we're prefacing this whole conversation by, you know, saying that we're wanting to explore the lover. You know, we spoke a little bit about like connecting to land. I suppose before we dive a little bit more into that, I feel that it's probably appropriate and necessary for me to just acknowledge the land that I'm on right now, which is the notice Woodinchup here, the southwest region of Western Australia, the people here, the people in the
deep.
And just want to acknowledge their elders past, present, and emerging, and their continued connection to land, because it's going to be a part of the conversation that we have here. Thanks for that. And look, man, I'm curious, man, and you're one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation is because I know how open you shared based on our last conversation. So I wanted to explore your own personal journey of the lover archetype, and maybe even explore like the kind of the child version of that, which is that Oedipal child, right? The mama's boy and the dreamer, right? And so I was wondering, would you be able to speak a little bit more into like what the Oedipal child is and what the lover, you know, in the kind of child version is in terms of the mama's boy and the dreamer?
Absolutely. So I think the first thing when we talk about archetypes is we tend to think that it's child and adult, but it's really immature and mature. And one thing we really struggle with, which is really important to lay here in Western society, particularly nowadays, and as you were talking about ancestors and stuff, we don't have an initiation process. So our initiation process is turning 18, and all of a sudden I'm allowed to go out and do everything. I'm an adult, like, but you've never actually done anything to become an adult. So I just wanted to clarify that. So, and then the Oedipal child is really important to look at. So it's to do with the connection, obviously, to mother, and the connection with mother as a whole. So when we talk about mother, it's not actually our physical mother. It's Mother Earth. It's mother. It's the grandmother of the universe. And it's that connection that we always want, that eternal nourishment, that eternal love. So it's almost that true connection to the true divine feminine. And what we struggle with, and I know I definitely struggled with it, was early on, we have this relationship with our mother. We don't understand that our physical mother is only doing the best they can. So we picture the grandmother or the Mother Earth or Mother Gaia as this all giving. And then we go, why didn't our mother give us that? But they're only human. They make mistakes. They have their own emotional traumas from their childhood. Generational traumas come up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So then when we start looking into that sort of immature idea, we have a sense of wonder. So if we're purely in that Oedipal child authentic lover archetype, then we have a sense of wonder, a sense of curiosity, a sense of adventure, of learning. And I was a witness, and now being a parent now, you would be the same. We almost subconsciously stop our children from doing that at times because we feel that they shouldn't be doing that, or it's inappropriate in the time, or, you know, we have to sit at the table and be quiet, or whatever the programming is. And that was definitely my upbringing as well. So that sort of led me into not being able to express my emotions or understand my emotions in a way. So it almost made me suppress them. And then I almost went so far into the mama's boy, particularly going through it as a teenager. Like I never had a girlfriend as a teenager. I you know, had crushes and stuff, but never worked out. So I would repress back into porn. That was my go-to, porn and masturbation, and it was such an easy fix. So when we're stuck with that mama, in that mama's boy idea, that shadow of the immature, we want to get that quick fix because we're not getting the nourishment that we feel like we need, but we don't have the emotional maturity to understand that of what we have to do. So we go into that needing that quick fix idea of, and just doing it. And we see it now, even with adults that get stuck in their mama's boy. It's that idea of, yeah, the womanizer. We all know what the womanizer is. It goes every week and goes, you have to pick up another girl, and they might go on a date and they go, oh, she's just not good looking enough, or she's not this, or she's not that. Because we have this idea that the mother or the goddess is this image. And if we don't attain that, we feel like we've failed. But that is also because we haven't achieved that nourishment, being young enough and realizing that, you know, our parents haven't allowed us to emotionally regulate, or we haven't allowed ourselves to emotionally regulate. So we go for that quick fix, which is porn, or which is masturbation, or which is sleeping around. All you have to do, you know, even now, like as an adult, you jump on a porn site, like, and it's all categorized. Like, kind of the big things that we talk about is the categorization of things, because it literally dissociates us from that's actually a person to now it's an object. And I'm not saying that, you know, porn is good or bad or anything like that. I'm just saying that that's the psyche of it and the way we look at it and how we go into doing things with intent. So if we have the intent of, I'm just going to do this because I just have to get myself off, or I have to achieve this, or I, what can I get? It almost becomes an attachment parasitic relationship with whatever it is you're trying to achieve, rather than a communion or of coming together. So particularly in a couple, it's, you know, what can I give to this person? Even if it is, happens to be a one night stand, that's what you're doing. Even with yourself, if it's self pleasure, what can I give to myself in this situation? Or am I just doing it to get myself off? And then if it is just to whatever I can achieve, it's the shame that comes through. And that's when we then get into that addictive mode. As we start to get older, it becomes almost addictive. So I know for me, 100% was addicted to porn. So addicted, it wasn't funny. Every single chance I got when I was going through uni, I'd come home, I would leave uni assignments, leave uni study and jump online. I'd be on from after dinner till 3-4 in the morning, get up at 6 again and go. And no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't break that. And that's the biggest thing. Once we start living in that shame and we're in that shadow of the addict and the mama's boy, we can't disconnect from it, no matter how hard we try. I mean, you know, it's like you ask an addict of anything. Like, I know I'm addicted, but I just can't stop. And the more you think about it, the worse it becomes. And I think one thing we really need to clarify here with for everyone watching is it's not just about sex, or it's not just about alcohol, or it's not just about drugs, or it's not just about whatever. Addiction is addiction. As I started to really connect with my wife and started doing this sort of stuff, I transitioned to an addiction of fitness and the gym, because I still didn't understand the process of actually tapping into my emotions, allowing my emotions to flow. So then when we go into the authentic lover, we actually allow our emotions to flow. We play, we can laugh, we can do all these things we need to do. We almost let that inner child out. But my wounding from my inner child was so ingrained in me that the only way I could get acceptance was to be successful. And play was never a really big thing for me or anything like that. So my children have taught me that. So being able to tap into that has allowed me to start moving past the addiction and into a point of, okay, I know exactly where I am. I can, you know, I want to have sex with my wife. Cool. Okay. I'm going to do it from a loving standpoint, but also know what I want to achieve. I want to go there and I want to help my wife feel good. Or if it's self-pleasure, I want to make myself feel good. You know, I want to include breath work. I want to do things like that actually help me to feel better. And when we start tapping into that about what can I give in every situation, that idea, we actually start to reprogram ourselves and rewire everything to a point where shame is no longer an issue. We don't have inhibitions because we are actually just tapping into what's authentic. We're no longer covering the shame and the inhibitions and anger that covers that. For me, was that there's definitely emotion I used to cover that, was because I deep down in my core knew I wasn't being myself. And that was shameful.
I love a couple of things you touched on there, man. Something that rings a bell for me is, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Don John with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but he's like,
yep.
This,
yep.
For me, what you described is like the stereotypical, like, shadow, the addict version of the lover, right? He embodies that based on like what I understand. And the transformation of him throughout the movie towards the end is him stepping into his lover in its fullness. And he doesn't get there like completely, but it's definitely that transformation that happens towards the end of the movie when I think he starts having a bit of a casual relationship with Julianne Moore and her character. What I find this quite interesting though about that is the way that particular narrative is framed. And I think this is also true for a lot of men in general, just because of the reluctance that men have to do sexuality work and the encouragement and celebration that there is for women in the spirituality space to do sexuality work, is a lot of men are kind of outsourcing their lover to their female partners, right? Or they come from this outsourcing of the lover and that, in that addicted sense, to the pornography that they're watching, or to the booze that they're drinking, or to the gym that they're going to, or to this particular activity that they do. And then that kind of transitions in and they go on a bit of a journey. They realize that their female partners have done a bit of this like healing work. They've done a bit of this self-development, sexual liberation work. And so she becomes kind of this surrogate pathway for him to learn a little bit more about his sensuality, his eroticism, his feelings, which I guess is like, okay, but it's like not women's responsibility, right, in these heterosexual relationships to be that for us as men. So I think there's, to harken back to like what you were saying, it's like there needs to be some sort of initiation, right, for guys to step into their sexuality, their eroticism, their feelings, and their sensuality. And I had a really interesting conversation with, I'm going to shout out Jordan Hackett here. He's coming up on a podcast that I've got. We talked about initiations for sexuality, like what rites of passage in terms of sex and sensuality and eroticism look like. So I think that's a really interesting conversation. But I'm curious, man, like the other side of the shadow is like in the immature sense, is the dreamer. And I'm wondering, because that doesn't sound like a bad thing to me, right? Like, doesn't sound necessarily like a negative thing. But I was wondering if you could dive a little bit deeper into what the immature archetype of the shadow is, the dreamer.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you touched on, the immature is the dreamer. And then in terms of the mature, or we think of an adult, I guess, but still towards the more mature, the shadow becomes the repressed. The dreamer is really an embodiment of apathy, just being apathetic, just blasé, whatever. You know, times that being a dreamer is great. You know, they we can dream about, you know, change the world, or the spiritual connection, or these things that we want to dive deeper into. But often we just dream about narcissistic things in a way. It's that idea of dreaming of what I can control and doesn't really matter. I'm just me, whatever. Like, you've probably all seen it. I used to be a high school teacher and I'd have the year 9 and 10 boys just in that dream state, like, whatever, I don't care, whatever, my life's awesome, whatever, to get everything I want, like, because I'm just a spoiled rat or whatever it is. So we get stuck in that. And the thing with the dreamer is often the mama's boy, sorry, I had a mind blank. So the mama's boy is often very present just under the subsurface. So often at times we can be apathetic and almost depressed. So the two shadows actually intertwine all the time. And like you talked about on your post last night in the comments, in the blurb to your post, the caption was really, really beautiful, beautifully written, that you talked about that we actually go from one to the other all the time. And so the dreamer will often be like, I don't care. But then we'll go home, say, if you're using a teenage boy, for example, go home and we'll look at porn and masturbate 6 hours in that addictive state. And then I'll come back and they'll hit the shame barrier. They'll hit these emotions. They can't process these emotions and just be stuck and go, oh, whatever, I don't care anymore. And I guess as well, it sort of filters into everyday reality too. So I'll use myself as an example. I got to the point where I didn't care about you doing, you know, for example, doing university work, or I had an assignment coming up that was due in 2 days' time. I know I can finish that in 2 hours. Like, I can get that done. I know I can get that done easy. I can spend the next 6 hours doing this. Like, doesn't matter. It's not going to affect anything. When you know it does, you know it affects everything, but you don't care about it. And then as you start getting older, you start getting to depressed, or start getting to that more mature mass in the depressed phase, which is again the same thing. So we go through apathy. We don't actually feel connected to anything. We can't build genuine relationships. Often if you are stuck in the shadow, you'll go from, like I said, that addicted state where you'll get what you go and do what you want to do. And then through guilt, shame, fear, anger, all these emotions, these low vibrational emotions, you start to go into a point of apathy. And you'll almost get to the point where your libido, for example, if we talk about sex, will drop because you almost feel so guilty that the only way to combat this addiction you might have is to not go near it at all, rather than actually working through why you have that. So, but then when the opportunity arises randomly, something will spark in your head, you go, oh, okay, cool, that's, I can do that again. And then it's just this spiral. So it's about, I guess the other side is complete apathy and just, you know, being blasé and not actually wanting to even go through emotions. You become emotionally stagnant. And when you're in your authenticity as the lover and the archetype, you process your emotions, you work through emotions. And it's something that particularly as men, we're so programmed not to do. Like I would have a guess, probably I would say 98 out of 100 men and women as well. I'm not sure, obviously I didn't grow up in that environment, but what are you crying for? Just get over it. Even from 3 years old, I remember being told that, you know, and I know so many of my mates have been, same thing. Clients, same thing. I said, you know, I used to get told, just get over it. Like you're a man up Australia, like particularly here in Australia, everything's man up. So we actually go, okay, that emotion is not a good thing. So I better suppress that. And then we then get issues where we can't control our anger. We can't control our rage. And we see the results of that. And, you know, obviously there's a whole myriad of factors, but I personally believe that's one of the big factors in why there's abuse in this world, big time. It's because we don't know how to emotionally regulate. We just get to that point where we're a volcano, we're building up, and then we explode and we don't know what to do. And I'm not saying it's an excuse at all. Just want to clarify that it's definitely not an excuse, but it's a reality that once we can actually start emotionally regulating and actually find out why we're triggered or find out what's going on, often it goes back to something where we haven't been able to emotionally regulate or express our emotions, let our emotions flow. Like, and this is one big thing I say with my clients is it's okay to be angry. You're allowed to be upset. It's how we process that and it's how we express that. That's the important part. And it's a big lesson I'm learning with my son. You know, he's four, just about to turn four, going through those sort of some big changes there, you know, exploring the world. And it's like, it's okay to be angry, but it's not okay to lash out and do this, this, and this. It's how we have to deal with it. So when we can do that, that then allows us to step into the lover, which allows us to play. It allows us to experience pleasure. It's that creative aspect of just, and it's almost the, I don't give a crap. I am who I am. I am, this is me. I'm going to play. I'm going to be playful and I know what I want and I'm going to go and get it. And this is where I think as well in society, particularly there's a big push in an emasculation way, I guess, where, you know, if a man wants a woman, yes, we need permission all the time, but to show your partner that you want them is beautiful. And they're like, I want to be with you. Like I want to be with you. And I want to connect, and that then pushes the partner into the feminine as well. So when we actually step into that match then and go, this is what I want without, I'm not ashamed of what I want. This is what I want to feel. This is how I want to make you feel. And I'm not ashamed of how I want to make you feel. Then we can step into that divine masculine. We have the divine feminine coming together. And we have the sacred union. And I think that's what you were saying about, you know, women taking that step and going into their femininity and that divine sacred sex on the feminine side. One of the big interesting things when we actually start, if we talk about the king and the queen archetypes, is often the king needs the queen to be able to initiate. And so it's an interesting concept because we all have masculine and feminine inside us, but also it plays out in our relationship dynamic too. And the movie 300 is a beautiful example of that. And I don't know if you've seen that movie anyone watching has seen that, where Leonidas has the Persian scout come and he is about to kick him down the well. He's like, this is Sparta. But before he says that, he looks around at everyone. He's like, he knows he's the king. He's in charge of his kingdom. He has the pictures of nature. He has the kids, where he's the father role. He has the lover. He looks at his queen. And he only does something when the feminine says, go. Because the feminine is the intuition. The feminine is the driver. So we can have that desire to push and want, but we need that feminine, almost not approval, it's not the right word, that feminine intuitive, yep, let's do it, let's go. So, and that's where, again, when we step into that true lover as well, when we actually step into our power, your partner will be in that feminine as well, get drawn, almost driven into that pure feminine of like, yep, well, I love what you're doing here. Let's go. That, and that's where the connection happens. But that can only happen when we're coming from a point of authenticity, a point of strength on both sides. And when we start looking at the energies, the masculine tends to be more of a dominating energy and the feminine more of a submissive energy. And we need to understand that that's okay as well.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you touched on something there, which I think is really interesting. And it made me think of like midlife crises for like men, like the stereotypical midlife crisis where like guys will, I mean, it's portrayed in movies and shit where the guy goes and buys like a Ferrari or like, leaves his family, goes and dates like a younger woman or whatever the stereotypical kind of example is. I'm sure we can kind of picture that. And what that kind of says to me, that's kind of represented, is like this repression of the lover for his whole life, right? This repression from his desires, from his, like what he wants to feel, like those things that you were kind of talking about of like, you know, expressing those in a healthy way. A lot of guys will close that all off and pretend that they don't have them, and they'll pursue like, you know, career, and they'll pursue, you know, things that you're supposed to have, and they won't give themselves the permission to experience pleasure and kind of enjoy life. So they kind of push it down. And then it gets to the point where it just, you know, it bursts, right? Or it kind of shoots out the side in this like really unhealthy way of trying to engage with the lover archetype, which they've kind of pushed to a side for a long time. And that looks like that kind of stereotypical midlife crisis. That's just something that kind of popped up when you were saying that. I was like, I reckon that's really got something to do with that kind of lover, especially like the enjoyments of life. Because then they go and seek out these things that they're supposed to enjoy, fast cars and, you know, young women and, you know, not having any responsibilities, not being tied down or anything like that, like all that kind of immature way of thinking about life's pleasures, I suppose. And almost like this kind of validation piece as well, I feel like, which is what the lover is kind of looking for, right? It's like this wanting to feel complete or wanting to feel kind of filled up or wanting to feel like, I guess, feel this hole that we kind of have, which is with connection, we can feel it like really healthily. But a lot of us feel that hole that we have with kind of the seeking of approval or seeking of validation. Like we wanted this quick instant gratification fix. We oftentimes, as men particularly, we externalize that. I mean, I think as people, we externalize that. We get it from social media. We get it from like our friends. We just get it from family members. We just get it everywhere. We try and feel it, right? We grasp things to try and put it into that hole. But I think like, instead of like externalizing that and trying to seek it like outside of ourselves, that kind of lover in his fullness is, and you hit the nail on the head there. You're like, someone just goes, I don't give a fuck what you think. Yeah, I feel confident and comfortable in myself, and I don't really care what it is that you have to say about me, because I feel good about myself. I love myself. I kind of have that self compassion, that self worth, that self esteem, that love for my own kind of being, that I don't need necessarily you to give that to me, right? And I remind things like the datum says with regards to like a relationship where you don't want to put your eggs in your partner's basket, so to speak. You kind of want to have your eggs in your basket. Your partner is responsible for your happiness. You're responsible for your happiness, and vice versa. Yeah. Your partner is responsible for their happiness. And from these kind of two places of people kind of loving themselves, you then share that love with one another. And I think that's like a really interesting approach to the relationships, and a good reframe, because we tend to really outsource that to our partners, especially when we're quite young. I see that in some of my younger clients as well. It's like their self-worth is dependent on what their partner thinks about them rather than like how they think about themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that self-love piece and connecting back into the self, I think is like quite integral to that initiation into the lover and stepping into his fullness. Is that kind of fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to touch on a little bit what you were saying there as well. The whole saying of we all heard happy wife, happy life, you know, and absolutely we all want to be happy, but that's almost programmed of I'll just stop doing what I want. I'll give myself away to make sure my wife's happy. But at the end of the day, they're probably not going to be freaking happy either. Like, you got married for a reason because of who you are. And yes, we want to develop, we want to grow. But if you're just selling yourself short and not actually opening up, you know, communicating effectively, and then that goes back to your self-worth as well and your self-love. If you haven't done that healing, I think a lot of the issues that come up, particularly with the lover, all tie back to inner child. And if you can go back to that inner child where these traumas are, like why, you know, for me, I was so scared of rejection, not being accepted, because that's one of my big inner child wounds. So I would almost be like, okay, I'll do what I have to do to please someone or whatever. And then, so I'd go jumping between the addict and the depressed, addict and depressed, until I started looking and going, okay, why am I getting triggered? What's going on? Okay, now I'm at the point where, and I have clients where we actually recognize, okay, like, you know, a conversation might come up with my wife, and I'm like, okay, I'm starting to get a bit, but this is going down the path of my inner child starting to get wounded. I'm going to express that and say that. And when you can actually express and say that, it's actually so empowering. It doesn't sound like much, but you're actually now stepping into your authentic lover and your authentic king, because you're stepping in and going, this is who I am. This is how I feel. These emotions are valid. Let's work through them. And once I work through them, it might literally take a 5-second conversation. But when we suppress and we don't love ourselves enough to actually express who we are, if it's just, if we suppress all that, we get to the point where we actually lose connection with ourselves when we express. It's so vital, and it just opens up the connection between, like you said, between when you love each other, then you love yourselves, create a union. And I have this saying that I use with my clients, and it's verbalize before we irrationalize. So often we don't express how we feel, and because it might upset someone, or we feel like it's not going to, you know, I don't want to start a fight or whatever, or I don't know how to say it properly. But then we'll start irrationalizing, or the other person will start irrationalizing, going, oh, what are they doing? What are they thinking? Are they doing this? Are they doing that? And then this creates tension. And you're not being authentic. You're now trying to fill a hole. So then you'll go and, oh, I don't want to deal with that. I'll go and drink, or I'll go and look at porn, or I'll go to the gym, or whatever it is. Or you should become completely apathetic and sit in the lounge with a remote, which is watching on TV and not communicating either. So you go completely into that shadow. So if we can verbalize and connect, and the big thing is sometimes you need to verbalize saying, I need time. I need time away to actually reconnect with myself and ground myself and connect. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things is nature and getting outdoors. You know, it's, we think, often get caught thinking the love up is just about interpersonal connection. It's connection with your environment. It's connection with everything. It's connection with your health. It's connection with your spirit. It's connection with the earth. So if you can get out and you'll realize how beautiful creation is. You can look out and like go to the beach, or you go for a walk in the bush and go, wow, like, this is all connected. This all works. Okay, cool. I'm starting to feel that love. I'm feeling that oneness that the little child likes to feel, that the little child gets nourished by that whole complete oneness. And then you then can reconnect with your child. And what do children want to do? They want to play. They want to have fun. They don't want to be boxed in this little room. They want to have fun. They want to express. And then you can take that into your relationships. How many clients do you have? And how many people talk about, oh, sex is great, it's just so boring at the moment. It's just so vanilla. Like, I'm not saying we have to go and do all this kinky stuff, but having fun and playing, like, you know, it doesn't even have to live sex. Intimacy is play to me. And that's what I talk with our clients, my clients, about. Intimacy is play. It could just be having a laugh, having a dance, being silly, having a joke. That's when things leave. So you think about, even when you first connected with your partner, hear all the time, oh, they like, it was their humor that just caught, that got me. So I could just play and be myself, and we could have fun and have a laugh. So often we just let life get in the way rather than just connecting with that. So sometimes it's really important that you need to stop and be with yourself and then come back into that communion with your partner.
Yeah, man. Something that, like, I often think about is like sensuality, and not sensuality in like the sexual intimacy kind of way of thinking about it, but sensuality in like the very, like, in the very like simple way of connecting with your senses, right? In like the very like practical way of just like how do you engage your senses, like your sense of taste and smell and sight and hearing and touch, like your literal sensuality. And you know, in terms of like practicalities, in terms of like ways that you can access the lover and maybe explore it a little bit more and hopefully kind of move towards the lover in his fullness, is at least in my mind, is engaging with your senses. It's like spending time noticing what it is that you feel, not only physically when you engage your senses, right? How does something taste? You know, how does something, you know, feel when you touch it? What about when you smell it? When you go for a walk, what do you see? But then also, like, what do you feel because of that physical sensation? Like, take that a little bit deeper. You've got a surface level physical sensation. What's beyond that? What emotions does that elicit? does that bring back any memories? Does it bring back any, you know, past experiences? Does it invoke like thoughts and feelings for the future? Like what else is there, and how can you engage with those things that come up when you start at your senses? And it can be the opposite way around as well. You know, if you're having trouble like really engaging with the senses, that's like something you're not very used to. Feels a little bit awkward to like go and do some mindful eating, for example, and really like, you know, eat some chocolate and strawberries, and that feels kind of awkward to you. Like go the opposite way around and, you know, tap into an emotion, right? And anger can be one of those ways, right? The lover doesn't show up in any place. Like airy, fairy, fluffy emotions, it can be those like more intense, quote unquote, negative emotions, right? And it's like tap into your anger first and allow that to bubble up, allow that to come to the surface. And obviously in a healthy space where it's not going to impact anyone else. And then from that, what do you feel physically, right? Allow the anger to come up and then notice, do you feel that in your chest? Do you feel it in the back of your neck? Do you feel it in your cock, in your balls? Feel it in, you know, wherever. And just like starting to learn how to connect those two things. That's what I often do with my clients, is like notice that there's physical manifestations of emotional healing. By, you know, so you can evoke emotions by doing certain physical things. And for me, like, without really having too much familiarity with the archetypes, that's something I do a lot of work with. But for me, just based on the conversations that you and I have had, I think that could be an interesting way to like explore into the lover is just through like sensuality. Is that, would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the big things that we do with our clients is, and my wife and I do when we do couple stuff as well, is big one, like you said, accepting these perceived negative emotions. No emotion is negative. And they just get a bad rap, to be honest. And primal screaming and healthy raging is just so important and so powerful to your relationship. And you can do that individually. Like I do it individually. I'll go down the beach and I'll find a nice quiet beach and I'll just, with my feet in the sand or my feet in the water, just tense every muscle and just scream. And I have clients who do that. There's also couples rage, you know, and my wife and I have done this with couples workshops, and it's so beautiful. You actually can, the way you know, I'll actually explain it so people who are watching might be able to try it, is you might, it's a bit hard if you've got little kids, you need to go outside or whatever, but if you can get a room or even be outside, you know, it might be 5 meters away from each other, and you just say the things that are pissing you off. For example, it might be like, I really wanted to come home from work today and just have dinner on the table. I've had a really shitty day. Or, you know, I just wanted, you know, your partner might be, if they're a stay-at-home parent, might be like, I just wanted you to come home and take the kids for 10 minutes. Like just whatever, those little things that cause triggers that fester up and we don't actually express that often. Say those things and then just let out the biggest scream you can. But the most important thing with this is that the other person holds space. Now, what we mean by that is you don't let what they say hurt you or affect you. You're basically just a sounding board going, I've got you, I feel you, and it's okay that you have frustrations. I'm not gonna let my wounds from my childhood or my traumas be hit. And you both do it, and then you just come back to an embrace, and the energy you have when you do that and that connection you create by, again, it's just vulnerability. It's breaking down walls. Like I when my wife screams at a certain pitch, it brings tears to my eyes because it's like, holy shit, it literally just resonates through my heart. But then we come back together. You know, we think about, you talk about, like you hear people talk about, oh, you know, makeup sex, the best sex. Why? Because there's anger and there's raw emotion involved. It's not just effective. But if we can actually have that raw emotion, that raw connection without having to be in that point of sexual intimacy, but we can have sensuality and pure intimacy at that level, then everything is going to connect better. That relationship is going to connect better. You're both going to be in that lover archetype because the lover is feminine as well. And you're going to be able to play. You're going to be able to explore things. You're not going to hold judgment over each other. You're going to encourage each other to explore different things. You're going to be able to hold space for each other because shit does come up when you start doing work with this sort of stuff. You know, we all have traumas, we all have wounds, we all have past relationships as well. We have stuff that can hurt. And being able to hold space for each other because you have that connection, you understand, is so powerful that your intimacy on a physical level is only going to be stronger. because your emotional connection and your spiritual connection is tenfold stronger.
Yeah, man. I've been thinking about like the lover in terms of the, because it doesn't exist in isolation, right? The lover doesn't exist in a vacuum.
Yep. None of them do. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So this, we've been alluding to like the other archetypes as well, but I wanted to like, you know, maybe draw on some of those other ones and also like in terms of like the chronology of when we access the lover, you know, oftentimes it's framed as like the last one. I know in like Douglas Gillette and Robert Moore's book, it's like it's the last chapter, and then they release those four other books and it's the last book in those series. And so it's, and whenever I've seen it portrayed, it's always the last one. But I kind of feel like, and I know we spoke about this a little bit last time you and I connected, but I kind of feel like it's also the first one, right? It kind of bookends both ends of like the accessing of the archetypes. And I was wondering if you're able to speak into a little bit more about how it relates to the other three archetypes in the kind of grand scheme of those immediate archetypes.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like you said, all four of them intertwine. So the lover, the warrior, the magician, and the king. Well, I personally feel like the king should be last because it is literally the embodiment of the whole, the kingdom. I write the books. But when we're in our lover, so I'll give a quick summary. So the king basically is the overseer, brings all the other three together, is in control of the kingdom, literally like you think of a king, in control of a kingdom. But the big thing to think about is it's not a tyrannical ruler. It's a king through service. Again, so if we go back to the lover, it's about what we give. So the king's of service. The warrior is that part of our psyche that fights. It's that drive to do what we need to do to protect the kingdom. And the magician or the alchemist is the part of the psyche which is where we can mold and we can create our realm that we can control. Not in terms, again, not tyrannical in that, but control with love, with service, and just be empowered. So they all link together. So sometimes we don't even go into the lover till after we go through the warrior. We might need to actually stand up and fight and win the partner or win the battle or whatever it is that we need to do, which then brings the connection with our queen together. Or it might be that, you know, I need to create something. I need to work with what I'm doing. I need to mold the environment that I'm in a mystical way to be able to create that space where the lover can come out and the energies combine that I can actually connect with my partner or even myself in that time. You know, like even on a practical level, like, you know, talk about, you know, creating an environment, so alchemizing an environment where say self-pleasure is actually a healthy habit rather than a negative habit. So we actually, you know, you think about, you talk about when you look at a lot of women's sensuality, they're like, create the environment, get candles, get music, get your breath work going, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which we should be doing as men too. But so that's the alchemizing part as well. Or you can go even further. So going back to 300 again, that the movie, it's such a beautiful explanation of the archetypes when you actually look at it from this point of view. So Leonidas, if you haven't seen it, he starts a war with Persia basically, and he has to go see the oracles, and they're basically shadows. They are the shadows. They're decrepit. They live in complete lust. They've got all these things. And he has to ask them under the law to go to war because he needs to step into his warrior because he's stepped into his king energy and gone, I need to do this with the queen's approval, but I've got to be a warrior and go and do this now. They say no. It's not approved. And he's like, well, fuck, I'm the king. I've started a war. Everyone in Sparta is going to die now because of me. What do I do? So he taps into his alchemist or his magician, and he finds a loophole in the law. So he gets his 300 best men. They just go for a walk because they're not army. So he finds, like, he alchemizes the situation. He looks at it. He can analyze from above, takes a lot of information, uses a lot of discernment. So that's where discernment as a man is really, really important. We actually step into that magician. And from there, he then uses his authenticity, creates what he needs to do. But then he then steps into his lover archetype straight after it because his queen is like, holy shit, you're awesome. The divine masculine is amazing. The feminine's awesome. And then they have passionate sex before they go to war. But it's the example of you can alchemize what you need to do with discernment, take that information, you can create your kingdom that you need to do. in every single situation that we're in. And then when we do it with love, so from the lover, we can express our emotions in a healthy way and we can move through and we can connect with that lover. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally, man. And you know what reminds me of? I know you use 300 as a lovely example, but I think of the Lord of the Rings trilogy as like, if we think of that as an archetypical reading of, you know, the four Jungian archetypes and how the lover kind of integrates with all of them. I kind of think of like Aragorn, for example, as like the warrior and the lover kind of embody. And then towards the end, he kind of steps into his king. He like kind of leaves the warrior archetype and steps into the king archetype. I think of Gandalf as like the magician and the lover, or the alchemist and the lover, right?
Yep.
He alchemizes, or he kind of creates the environment from that place of compassion, from that place of like you're standing up for what he believes in and for that, for the love of the kind of like the people that he thinks are on the right side of history, I suppose. And then we've got in terms of the king, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, Aragorn comes to mind, but like, in terms of like just purely embodying the lover, I get like Samwise Gamgee feelings as well. Like the dude is just like full compassion and service and love for Frodo and that kind of journey that he goes on. But also like the playfulness side of the lover is kind of like Pip and Nero and like the way that they just kind of like treat like their old landscapes like this big giant playground. So I think like in terms of like archetypal readings, I really like the Lord of the Rings way of portraying all these different versions of like masculinity in a sense, right? Like there's like male masculine archetype. So so I think that I like the example of 300. I have to go back and watch it with that kind of archetype reading in mind.
Yeah,
I guess like just to close down, man, we've got like another kind of couple minutes. But I'm big on practicalities, man. I want to really hone in on and dial in on some things that people can take away from this, go out and start doing. And I think it's like as a couple, what you can do is kind of observe. What about like maybe some guys that are listening to this? They're like, I'm feeling a little bit disconnected from the lover. I feel like I'm flip flopping between kind of watching a lot of porn, for example, or just like really engaging unhealthily in my sexuality, and then trying to stop that and being really, that impotent or depressed lover and just not engaging with life at all. Want to kind of find that balance. What are some practical tools that they might be able to start employing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing is to understand, like you said, the emotions that are connected to these actions. So if we do that, have the discernment and the self-worth to be honest, actually sit there and after, and actually, if you need to, write down the emotions you feel, why you feel them. So is it shame? Is it anger? Is it embarrassment? Is it fear? Whatever the emotion is that's causing you to go down that route, and note that. And the first thing I get to do with my clients is we take a bit of a time travel back in life and go, okay, when was the first few times I experienced these emotions and why? So once we can do that, we actually can recognize the triggers, and then from the triggers we can work with it. So some practical actual work, once you understand where your triggers are, meditation is actually obviously a feminine thing. It's to sit and to do. It's very feminine energy, but sometimes we can almost be too masculine in a way. We can be so stuck in that masculine, that, or the shadow masculine, that we need actually to get into the feminine slightly to center ourselves. So meditation, breath work is incredibly powerful. Just breathing and taking that, even when it comes, if it is to do with porn, if that's the big thing, when you're talking about self-pleasure, don't stop self-pleasuring, but get rid of the porn and just do it as breath work. Slow things down, actually build that connection. And you can't have that connection until you actually understand where things are at. So if you can understand where your emotions are coming from and why they're there, write them down and then connect with yourself. So I would start with meditation. Getting into nature, like I said, is the big one. Just getting into nature, switching off, getting off your phone, getting off technology. One of the big things that I do with my clients, particularly if they bring sort of this stuff from work, and then their escape is porn, or their escape is their whatever their addiction is, whether it's alcohol or their apathy is their escape, is before they get out of the car to go into their house, do 3 minutes of just mindful breathing. So set a timer on your phone, turn your phone on flight mode so you can't get a message, you can't jump on Instagram, you can't jump on anything like that. 3 minute timer, just deep breathing. Doesn't matter if it's in through your mouth or your nose, just get air in, through your diaphragm, and just it changes that mental state from where you are, so you can actually escape the stresses of the day without going into that addictive pattern. So once you can, and then you'll start to realize that you can communicate better, can connect better. So then that will then, and you might have had it, you might just need to release. You might need to do a primal scream in the car, for example, or you might need to just cry. Like, we don't talk about crying enough as men. You might need to just, you've had a really shitty day and you just need to breathe. And that's what the breathing will get the emotions out. And obviously, when you're in your lover archetype, we move through our emotions big time. We have to move through our emotions. So that's a really, really powerful tool. It can be 3 minutes, it can be 5 minutes, whatever it is. And also with that, if you are driving to and from work, as you know, we spend a lot of time going to and from work, listen to something mindful. It's incredible how if we don't listen to the same negative stuff all the time, we start listening to a podcast or we start listening to music that has a higher vibrational frequency that brings out different emotions and allows us to transmute those emotions from negative to positive, then we can start actually tapping in rather than going that first step, going back to whatever that addiction is.
Mm, yeah, nice, man. I think there's like there's so much value in, I mean, like going to counseling, going to therapy, like going and speaking to someone to help identify what it is that you're trying to feel when you turn to those addictive, you know, yeah, tendencies or behaviors, right? Like whether it's, you know, whether it's you're trying to, like I identify like validation before, if you're seeking like that validation because it's low self-worth, or if it's you're seeking something because you feel lonely, or if it's you're seeking like an emotional connection, or you like, we want to be this, like, you know, there's a wounding around not being shown enough attention, so you want to be like the center of attention, yep, or whatever it is. Like, if you can, and it's like, think like it's important for everyone, I suppose, regardless of whether you think you've got issues at all, to go and see a counselor or a psychologist, is if you've, you know, got the means to do it, is because it can help identify those inner woundings, those inner child kind of woundings that oftentimes act out and try to heal in just not so healthy ways, right? There's a reason why we do these, yeah, certain things. There's a reason why we have these open mechanisms or defense mechanisms. It's because they essentially serve a purpose, right? They stop us from feeling hurt, or they stop us from feeling pain, or they, you know, they just might not be very beneficial in the long run. They might be, you know, yeah, in an acute sense, they might help, but in terms of a, you know, longevity sense, they're probably not going to be very beneficial. So I think that's like a really important piece. It's like, figure out as much as, yep, you can why you're doing these certain things, what emotions you're actually trying to feel, what it is that you're trying to feel. And that'll give you an insight to like, oh, okay, maybe instead of doing this particular thing, like instead of going and watching porn, for example, and getting my cup filled in that way, maybe I can do that through, yeah, listening to an erotic short story and, you know, enjoying the feeling of that arousal in my body and self-pleasuring in a really different way, as opposed to just kind of really numbing out and being, you know, outsourcing that to the screen that's in front of me. Yes.
That, yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Like from there as well, man, it's just like, go and see a counselor, go and see a psychologist if you've got, like, there's plenty of people that are offering that particular type of work, and a lot of it's quite affordable as well. So that's something I just wanted to go on.
Yeah, absolutely. And even with that, like, I 100% completely agree with that. But even just talking with your partner, so often we just feel so ashamed. I used to feel so ashamed of, like, I watched porn, like, and I'd be just like, I'd actually feel stressed waiting for my partner to come home or whatever. And I've done that. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to sort of just walk on eggshells, and like, she'd pick up on the energy straight away. We're energetic beings, pick up on it straight away. It's just even just having that conversation going, hey, like, I've been struggling with this a little bit. I feel like I need to talk to someone, but also feel like I need to tell you, because I need to be vulnerable, because we are in a relationship and I want to go and explore why I've got these issues or why this has come up. And again, holding space for each other, because it's not just men that go through this, women go through this stuff as well. Just being able to hold space for each other in that way. And again, it comes back to that verbalizing before rationalizing. So often I used to rationalize that my wife was going to block me, she was going to leave me, so I better tell her, you know, where as soon as you tell her, she's like, okay, that's, you know, like, why are you doing it? Again, like, and you can have that conversation and then you build that intimacy through that way as well, through that vulnerability and openness. And then when you start, the more intimacy you build, The more connection you build, the more you allow these things to come out, the less you get drawn to this stuff.
Yeah, man. Dude, thank you for spending an hour having a chat with me about this very important and interesting topic. And yeah, I'm going to share this and throw your Instagram handle up in there and promote your work, dudes. You're doing some amazing stuff, and particularly for men, I think it's such a necessary avenue for them to explore. So yeah, just a lot of gratitude and a lot of love for you spending a bit of time having a chat and being open and honest with me. I appreciate it.
Cheers, Cam. Thanks, mate. Very humbled, very honored to be asked to come on. It's been great. And hope you guys got some value out of it. And yeah, always willing to have a chat. So if anyone wants to reach out to me and have a chat about anything, I'm here. And you too, Cam, if I have a chat again, let's do it again.
Much appreciated, man. All right, dude, have a good afternoon, man. I'll talk to you later.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. See you later.